I'll never forget my first state youth games. I was small, and although I was 17, I looked like I was about 12. I took sports far too seriously, and I remember really wanting to win beach volleyball and indoor cricket. I remember meeting Rod Tom for the first time, and we bonded over the fact that we both wanted to beat this team that hadn't been beaten for years. I remember unintentionally stealing Brito's chair and getting quite an evil eye because, quite frankly, I deserved it. And I remember Mr. Roddy's laugh and how much funnier everything seemed to be when we got him laughing. I remember the first captain's reports and how much we had a good time and how much we laughed at them. I remember staying in a building that was far too small for the team we had, and I remember the toilet packing it every night because there was only one for 40 or 50 guys. I remember the community and fellowship that was had over the weekend and the respect I had for the people who were much older than me. I remember sort of being confused when people said they were praying for me, and when I found out that the church had taken my photo and put it on a shirt and someone was praying for me. I remember all this because of what happened before all of that. I'd spent Saturday morning playing beach volleyball, and I wasn't really paying attention to anything like fellowship or meeting people because I thought I was good at volleyball. And I thought I was some kind of sporting legend that could look like a hero. But Saturday afternoon came and I played badminton. I didn't know anyone in the team, and I sort of just sat to the side and didn't really say too much. But then I was included. The group of guys who were playing included me in the seating arrangement and the discussion of victory and loss, and included me in just the general banter that comes along with state youth games. I left those badminton courts feeling a part of something. And this transferred from a smaller group into the whole Kingsley team. I was welcomed and I was included. So what does this look like in the church, in our church? How are people being included? I'm going to give you three reasons today to affirm why youth ministry. And Ben and Jamin will be smiling there because we did at the conference during the week, we did a session on preaching and communicating, and Dustin Bell said, make sure you have three reasons. That's all you need, three. Make sure you've got three. And we saw him the next day preach, and he made it very clear that he was going to preach on three points. So the three reasons to affirm why youth ministry, and hopefully confirm what you already know and think about youth ministry. But before we get into that, we'll just bow our heads and just pray. So thank you, God, for today. Thank you for this morning. Thank you for these guys who've jumped up and shared their talents. In leading worship, Lord. We just pray that what is said now is not from me, Lord, but from you. And what comes out challenges myself and the congregation. And it's not me and my words, but yours, rather, that will challenge. So we thank you for everything you've done and everything you continue to do, Lord. And in your name we pray. Amen. Now, there is never a certain age or time in your life when you're told to understand the Bible. And that's the beauty of it. We're called at any age. It's not a book that's too holy for certain people. It's not a book that you can only read when you're a certain age. It's not a secret book that we want to hide from people. Nor is it a book that is too difficult to understand that we don't want to read it. If we can receive and understand what God has done through Jesus Christ, we're old enough to start challenging ourselves with the Bible and its radical transforming power. Now, 2 Timothy 2:2 is going to be what I'll be basing most of my sermon on. So if you want to have 2 Timothy 2:2 out, and I'll give you a second to get that. And it says, "And the things you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable people who will also be qualified to teach others." Now, there are three things that I see that come out of this verse and that we can be taught today. Number one is it's our responsibility to equip young people for life and for ministry. So here we have Paul saying to Timothy, I'm a teacher teaching you. Listen so that you can teach others, and then they can go and teach teachers about teaching. It's a bit of a mouthful, but it's a pretty simple idea. It's a process that goes on and on. I teach you, you then teach the next, who will then teach the next. And this would have started with Jesus, who taught and sent out the apostles to go and teach, and generations would have gone as they taught each other. Have you ever stopped to think that Christianity is only one generation away from extinction? It only takes one generation to stop believing in Jesus, and Christianity will be finished. And that's a sobering thought. Now, 2 Timothy 2:2 sort of sums up the reason that I'm here. I've been entrusted to be the teacher who teaches others. That's my role in the church. I've been given a certain amount of time, and in that time I do admin stuff, which I'm slowly getting better at. Hopefully my team will nod when I say that. If you get an email from me, don't judge me and my grammar. I still think commas just go when you need to breathe. I don't fully understand the concept of them, but I'll keep working on that. Some of the time goes into to catching up with leaders and the youth, and chatting about life, and that can range from things as simple as a TV show about cars all the way to baptism, the struggles in life, what salvation is, and who Jesus is. Some of the time is given to organise events. We have a youth camp coming up on the 11th to 14th of July. We had GI Games yesterday, and we have State Youth Games coming up in the next month. And some of that time is used to study and learn, so that I'm qualified to teach others. Now, some of these things I'll start to master and get on top of, like emails. I can learn, and I can get good at writing emails. I can get good at writing good illustrations on a whiteboard. I've got a great teacher to learn from. But something I'll never fully conquer is study and learning. I can always learn more. And that's something that I take seriously, and hope that you as my church family will keep me accountable. I've been entrusted to teach others because I've been recognised as a reliable person. We'll get back to that thought a bit later on. During the Youth Alive conference, we got a chance to listen to Dustin Bell and talking about preaching and communicating and how he puts together a sermon. And something he said was that when Billy Graham was asked what he would do again if he had life over, what would he do? And Billy Graham said, I'd do two things. First of all, I'd study three times as much as I had done. And second of all, I'd pray more. Now, I don't know a whole lot about Billy Graham, but I know enough about Billy Graham to know that if he reckons that he could have learnt and studied more, then I should probably just go lock myself in a room and spend a whole lot of time studying, because if he thinks he can learn more, how much more can I learn? So please know that I do take this responsibility entrusted to me very seriously. And does that mean I'm always going to get it right? No. You might have seen Jamin's eye when he came up here. It's bruised and it had some blood in it. That was because him and I thought it'd be fun to fight each other with shoes during the week. And we've fought each other with keys, and we've fought each other with sticks, and we've fought each other with all kinds of things. But it just so happened on this day that I hit him in the face with a shoe and then had to take him to the emergency room to get his eye looked at. And he's now getting some treatment and things like that. So I do take the responsibility very seriously, but does that mean I'm always going to get it right? No. I'm not always going to get it right, but I'll never intentionally do anything hurtful or intentionally preach or teach incorrectly. And if I do, I trust that I have a church family who will lovingly rebuke me and set me on the correct path. Now, qualified doesn't only mean to be qualified educationally. Other translations of this verse say, now teach these truths to other trustworthy people who will be able to pass them on to others. So while I know that I need to study and learn more, it doesn't mean that that's the only way that I can be qualified. It means I can be qualified through my walk with Jesus. Now, it's no good having a guy who is academically sorted and educationally sound, but doesn't have his walk with Jesus fixed, sorted. He doesn't have a walk with Jesus. It's no good. It's been recognised that I can be qualified because my eyes are fixed on Jesus when I'm teaching. It's not just my responsibility to equip the young people of this church or this community. I've been blessed with a youth team that ranges from 18 to 22, and then it floats around for a little bit, and then it starts again at around 26, because to me, Steve and Troy are still 26 years old. They haven't grown up, and they're still the same age as when I started here. And just as I've been entrusted to teach others, these guys have also been entrusted to teach the kids the gospel truth and about life. So they turn up on Friday nights, help set up, spend time in prayer, practice music, and then the kids arrive. We then play some games with the kids, teaching them things like sportsmanship and how to be humble. And sometimes it's just fun to play games and be genuine with the kids. I'll never forget the night that Bob Willinger came and shared with us at our youth group. And And his wife was so happy to see kids running around and smiling and having some friendly competition and being included. And that was something that she mentioned that was a great encouragement. Now, it's great to see intentional games being done, but it's just as great to see Jesus being glorified and worshipped in a game of dodge when you can see a kid being honest and walking off, when you see a kid helping another kid up because he might have hurt himself, and when you just see some kids spending time and hanging out with each other, and all we did was throw some balls. We spend time in worship, and we have leaders who spend time selecting the music for each youth night. We have leaders who will help lead the songs, and the leaders reflect on these words and the meaning behind the songs and share that with the kids and why we worship with voice and instrument. We held a worship workshop a couple of weeks ago, and it was so great to see these young kids who wanted to start serving God with their gifts. They'd like to start being a part of the worship teams, and it was a great time spent with them. Now, and the other thing we do is we spend time listening and sharing through the message and group time with the kids. Now, some of the best conversations I've ever had have been from a group of guys who thought they were being funny by asking questions that they thought would offend, but actually allowed us to have a much deeper and honest conversation. Now, I've been a part of a group of 13-year-old boys brought along by a friend who, out of nowhere, just asked me what the Trinity is, who Jesus was, and why everything fits together so nicely. I've been outside having supper and seen a group of girls come out with smiles on their faces 40 minutes after the guys have come out, because they'd spend time being honest and talking to each other and spending time in prayer. We have leaders who have been entrusted to teach these kids, to grow these kids' faith, who have time to devote to the youth ministry. And does this mean that they'll always get it right? No, they're human, and they'll mess up. Sometimes I'll make a game that is dangerous and a kid could get hurt. I wasn't there on the night that those games were being played on that video, and I had a look at that and I thought, wow, that's quite a cool game, sliding around. But there'll be nights where kids could get hurt and sports may be dangerous. Maybe they'll sing the wrong words or pick a song that just doesn't take off at youth. Maybe they might say the wrong thing to a kid during group time or get nervous during a talk and forget what they wanted to say. And that's okay, because we're entrusting reliable people, not perfect people. And does this mean we're entrusting people who don't know or follow God? No, that doesn't mean that at all. We're entrusting people who are on a journey, and that journey is pointed towards Jesus. And like me, that's what makes them qualified. Their walk with Jesus is one of honesty and truth. James 4:7-8 says, "So humble yourselves before God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Come close to God and God will come close to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, for your loyalty is divided between God and the world." Now, James 4:8 is such a powerful verse, and I think when 7 is thrown in front of it, it becomes even more powerful, and that's probably why it's before it. It probably makes a lot of sense that James wrote those two together. It says, "Come close to God, and God will come close to you." But before that, it says, "Humble yourselves before God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you." Now, Satan has always attacked young people. The most vulnerable time in your life is when you're younger, and that's why we have leaders to help them get through. And these are the kind of people we want leading our youth, these kind of people who you want in the community, ones who will resist the devil and draw near to God. And the same battles have not been fought by generations. Our Satan has not used the same tools as time's gone on, so that is not to say that youth are the only ones with struggles. Other generations certainly have stuff to deal with, as finance, family, messes in life, and it's not only young people who are tempted by the internet. Well, it's a sobering thought to know that we're only a generation away from the extinction of Christianity. We're also a generation away from it absolutely taking off. Jesus being praised everywhere, and I hope that encourages you as we go into the second point. Our point two is young people face unique challenges. Satan will do his best to take the eyes of the young people off Jesus. And it's no surprise that the statistics say that the most important time in life is high school. There's a study that says 70% of high school kids leave church during high school, and over 10 years, only 35% of them come back. So at the absolute most, we get 65% of the kids who were in the church back into the church. Now, that's not every kid in the world. That's just the kids who have been a part of a church. So what do some of these challenges look like? I can't wait to say back in my day. I can't wait till I'm old enough to say that apart from maybe sitting on my porch and playing a banjo, I think saying back in my day is going to be one of the highlights of my golden years. Now, I don't know if anyone sits on a porch anymore or if people say back in my day, but I hope they do and I hope that I can say it. But I fear for the generations who will hear their grandparents say what they went through and think that they had it pretty easy. I never met my grandparents, so I haven't really heard stories about the old country or simpler times or about Rhodesia or Scotland. But I have seen enough Disney and Rugrats to know that grandparents tell really, really great stories. About the simpler times, the back in my day when things were simpler. Now, if in 50, 60, 70 years' time we have people saying back in my day when things were simpler, I can't compute to sort of think what that future is going to look like if what we're facing now in 50 years' time is going to be seen as simple. When I hear people talk about their youth and childhood, I genuinely hear stories of simpler times. There was still sin and temptation was all around, the bad fruits from Galatians 5, sexual immorality, impurity, lustful pleasures, idolatry, sorcery, hostility, quarrelling, jealousy, outbursts of anger, selfish ambition, dissension, division, envy, drunkenness, wild parties and other sins like these. So it's not to say that the past was simple. Every generation has its own struggles and trials, and I understand that. But I will say that these struggles did not come with the relentless wave of accessibility that kids have today. Now, the gate that leads to destruction is wide because there's so many different ways to access sin. That's not to say that there are any new sins. Satan hasn't thought this would be fun, let's throw some brand new sins into this generation. But he has got new ways to access the temptations that we've always had. 50 years ago, a lustful thought could have been made more difficult by purchasing a dodgy magazine, or maybe going down to the beach and seeing the occasional person dressed in a risque way. Nowadays, it's the beach, the movies, TV shows, shop windows, bus shelters, magazines, magazine racks, and the internet. Seeing the internet can be accessed on your computer, an iPad or a tablet, your smartphone, your fridge, your TV, and a bunch of other things, and I'd say it's probably harder to find something without the internet than it is to find something with the internet. 50 years ago, if you wanted to bully someone, you would just put them down face to face. You'd have to use your words. You could do it behind their back, but you'd use words. That has changed so much. Now you can jump on a keyboard, and you can attack someone at their home. You can call or message them on your mobile phone. You don't just have to attack someone who is in your area either. You can attack someone on the other side of the world and they can see it, and there's nothing they can do to hide from that. They can change their phone number, sure, but there's also these things called apps, and they're becoming more and more difficult and more challenging to get rid of. Now, Peter knew that Satan would use all kinds of distractions and lies to change our focus. And he said, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Be watchful. It's much easier to be watchful when you're only watching out for one or two things. Young people are being told to be entertained. If this isn't entertaining, go somewhere else. Do something else that's more fun. Don't lock anything into your diary because something better might come up. Gone are the days of RSVPing and keeping your word by saying you'll be there. It's now about who can entertain me more, not who asked me first and who should I honour. We live in a culture where yes meaning yes and no meaning no means absolutely nothing. We live in a culture where yes means maybe and no also means maybe. Kids would prefer to play sport on a gaming console instead of out in the park. I don't think there has ever been a generation that has been faced with so many different challenges and different ways to access and say yes to sin. I mean, you could lock a kid in a room and unless there was a magnet or lead around it, they could still access the internet. Enter through the narrow gate. For wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. So those 65% of youth in the churches that come back in 10 years, they're the few. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life. Not invisible or impossible or unseen, just small and narrow. It's still there. And Satan might have ways to tempt and seduce the young guys into this wide path, but we have the truth. We have the gospel and we have Jesus. Now, nothing Satan can throw at our younger generation can withstand the simple awesomeness of what Jesus promises. Life and life to the full. Better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere. I'd rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of the wicked. That's the kind of faithfulness I get excited about. I have no doubts that the narrow path is the right one. And I'm sure that these youngsters who come to hear the truth of Jesus would take that path. But someone has to tell them. And that's youth ministry. 2 Timothy 2:2 is for youth ministry. And things you've heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable people who will also be qualified to teach others. Does this mean that when I jump up to share a message with the kids, I'm going to teach them about predestination? Or does it mean that I'm going to teach something from a Hebrew text and what that means? Does it mean that I'm going to take some big theological notion or something that was written for uni students and share it with them? No, not at all. But it does mean that when our leaders get together, we share the gospel with the kids. We share the Bible with the kids, and we share with them that following Christ and how that can look in your life is the best thing possible. We teach them what is appropriate to their stage of life. For most of the leaders, they are young enough to have gone through similar situations as the kids, and they've gotten through. Opportunities to share how God got them through those times is always around. See, God hasn't changed, but Satan has. He knows that Jesus is enough, so what does he do? He throws everything he possibly can at the ones who will be most seduced. So what can we do about that? That brings us into point three. And point three is, what's your legacy? So think back to a time when a person had a part in your walk. Not the person who told you the first time about God, or not the person who necessarily prayed with you for the first time about accepting Jesus, but think about someone who left a legacy in your life. For me, it's a teacher that I can never thank enough. She told me straight that Jesus was real, and if I'm tired and burnt out, I should start searching to seek him. And that took me a long time, and Jethro played a part in that, and so did a bunch of other people in that seeking. But she still left a legacy. So what about the church? Does this mean that youth ministry does their own thing and children's ministry do their own thing and craft group does their own thing? And then we have a whole bunch of different ministries doing stuff? No, that's not it at all. We're a community and we are one in Christ. We are unified. We are the bastion of God's truth. And we all have the opportunity. So what will your legacy be? When you leave your chair, who will replace you? Who will take your seat? Now, I don't mean that in how are we going to get more numbers. I don't really care for numbers. I care for people. And to steal a phrase from a wise man who said we should be kingdom-minded and not kingsley-minded. So it goes back to that thought that one generation can end Christianity without a legacy left behind. Who will receive that baton? This doesn't mean that we're all going to talk to young people from the youth group, but it does mean that we're all called into action. Eternity is the place where we get to sit back and relax and enjoy. And a great encouragement for me has been a lot of people asking me about when are the prayer shirts going to come out? When can we pay money to buy a shirt and pray for the people on that shirt? And what a legacy that is, that people are praying for people that they don't even know. I'm sitting in this chair because of those prayer shirts. Someone prayed for me. We had parents from Toddler Jam coming to the Easter services. Now, what a legacy that is. Parents whose kids will grow up possibly in a church and have the opportunity to go through children's church and eventually youth. And who knows how many chairs that's going to fill and where those chairs will be filled. Making a beeline for the playground or the patio instead of a table after the service to encourage a mum or dad, who then feel encouraged to build into their children who are a part of iSpy. What a legacy that would be. Making people want to bring their friends to Kingsley, not because we're cool, or because we're perfect, or because we're following what is current, or because we're not following what is current. It's because we're a family who wants to serve each other. What a legacy that would be. Imagine all the chairs that would be filled over the city if young people brought a mate along to youth and church. See, leaving a legacy, filling a seat, doesn't mean we have to go have a coffee or a meal with someone. It just means we have to do what we do well for God. He takes care of the rest. So imagine this is going on and then the youngsters are also responding to this idea of a legacy. They see a need for a Bible study, so they start one. It grows and multiplies into two Bible studies, and what a legacy that is. There's a young fellow who's in Broome right now who is alive and safe because someone took the time to build a legacy like that. Imagine young people being brave enough to say to their friend, hey, come to State Youth Games, come to youth group, come to church. What a legacy that would be. A young person asks an older person for some advice. Then he gets mentored. A young person makes a beeline for the tables and sits with some people they've never sat with instead of standing comfortably with the same three people they stand with every week. I can quite literally list off a whole bunch of more scenarios of what a legacy can look like for us. But I'm going to let you guys come up with that on your own, and I look forward to seeing them in action. Where will this legacy take people? Will it take them to Kingsley? Will it take them to Padbury, Woodvale, Taliban, Africa? I don't know what that legacy looks like, but God does. And that's a sweet comfort. So back to that SYG story. When I went out to play sports, I looked for the smaller group of guys who made me feel included because I wanted to hang out with them. I wanted to be built up by them, and I wanted to know more about them and who they were. But I also wanted to know more about the whole team. I wanted to hear the captain's reports. I wanted to hear what Jethro had to say about the day's play. I wanted to go see Paul and the delicious food he'd prepared. Because it was more than just a few people who I could be involved with. When I saw what a small group of people my age had to offer, I wanted to see what everyone else had as well. What the older guys had, what the families had, what the community had, and what I could take from that. Youth ministry is important, and it'll keep running on Friday nights, and we'll still hang out on Sunday nights, and we'll do what we can and everything we can to see more youth come to know Jesus. Just like the children's church will do the same. But we don't want to have all the fun. Children's church doesn't want to have all the fun in telling the kids about how awesome Jesus is. The craft group don't want to have all the fun in sharing and praying with their friends. And the music team doesn't want to have all the fun in leading the congregation in praising our majestic God. We all have a chance. See, in unity, there are massive ways that we can leave legacies. So what does that look like for you this week? Is it prayer? Is it talking to someone new? Is it grabbing a coffee? Is it putting your hand up to serve somewhere or somewhere new? Taking a risk and asking a friend to youth or to church or to toddler jam or to craft group? Is it filling out a response form to let the church know what you need prayer for so that we can have people praying for you? Is it taking the next step and working through what that looks like with a friend or someone close? What will your legacy be? I have stuff I need to do, that's for sure, and I can't wait to see and hear what we all have to come up with.